Live from the heartland and the crossroads of America, it's Tony Katz today.
Now, I will admit to you that I did not see the game between the Pacers and the Knicks. But as I watched social media, I realized I didn't have to. All I had to do was watch the people screaming, "What the hell are the refs doing?" Now, don't get me wrong. The Pacers in that last couple minutes didn't play their best ball. But I'm one of the people who argues that if the whole concept is that the Knicks will wear you down, the Pacers can hang. And if they can hang, they can win. Tony Katz today. Good to be with you. JMV joins us. He is the voice of sports all over the nation. JMV1070 on the X. The Knicks beat the Pacers 121-117. The Timberwolves beat the snot out of the Nuggets 106-80. That's some humiliating stuff. But let's start with this Knicks Pacers game. Answer the question. Is this game the fault of the refs, or is this game the fault of the Pacers?
No, it's the fault of the Pacers. Pacers just couldn't close, couldn't get it done. Tyrese Halliburton, 6 points, just not going to work. He's supposed to be their guy, their dude, their dog, their closer, and he was none of the above. However, they found themselves in a very good winning situation, so it is on them. But I will sit here and tell you that the officiating, or lack thereof, had a great deal down the stretch, played a role in how that game went. And really what was most significant, even more so than maybe, Tony, you said you didn't see it last night, but that's a really bad Miles Turner moving screen, you know, late in the game, I think around 10, 11 seconds to go. He got called for an illegal screen that wasn't. And DiVincenzo of the Knicks actually flopped. That was easy for everybody to see, and certainly the official should have seen that as well. That was an egregious call, but it was something that was ruled a kick, a pass that was ruled a kick that actually Aaron Nesmith got his hands on. The reason why, Tony, that was more significant prior to is that was a 5-point swing, because the Pacers would have had the ball going the other direction. Likely a 2-on-1 would have scored to go up 2, but instead, Knicks got the ball back, retained possession, and then Dante DiVincenzo knocked down a 3. So that had major repercussions on the game, but all in all, the reason why the Pacers lost is because their guy did not perform at all, and the Knicks guy in Jalen Brunson was incredible with 43, and that basically is the game, and a lack of a close out of the Pacers leaves you down 0-1 in that best of 7.
Yeah, the play of Jalen Brunson, there's nobody who disagrees that he had an absolutely fantastic game last night. The question is this Jalen Brunson every night? And if so, you're the Pacers. Who are you putting on him, and how are you putting them on him?
Well, I don't know if they're going to have an answer for him. They tried Nembhard, they tried Nesmith, they tried to double to get it out of his hands, and he still went for his. I think, Tony, this is how I would look at it, because you go back to the Philly series too, and you know, you saw Brunson put up in those final two games 40-plus as well. So don't concede a 40-plus game ever. But I think you more have to concentrate on what's going on around you. You can't let DiVincenzo go for 23. You can't let Josh Hart go for 24. I thought that's among the heroics on the basketball floor of Jalen Brunson is what got the Knicks that win. And I think that's how the Pacers defensively are going to have to handle it. We've talked about this time and time again over the course of the season. They're not good defensively, but you're going to have to deal with not just Brunson, who may go off on you anyway and probably will, but you just can't have the supporting cast members doing what they did to you last night. And then, you know, the biggest deal, I'm going to go off on the officiating later on today too, because it was awful at the end. But the biggest deal was the absolute no-show from Tyrese Halliburton, whether he's injured or whatever.
Is anybody making the claim that Tyrese Halliburton is injured?
There are stories going around that maybe he's dealing with a back, and maybe it's that hamstring that obviously shelved him for some games in the middle of the season. I know this, the Pacers say, hey, you know what, this time of year, everybody's got dings. Josh Hart plays 48 minutes. I'm sure he has dings. He's okay as well. For what Tyrese Halliburton gave, there's no excuse. No excuse whatsoever. For 6 points and really the lack of doing anything, especially in closing time down the stretch when his team really needed you. I said and made the argument, Tony, last night, that if I'm Rick Carlisle, and he's not going to do it because, you know, you got Tyrese Halliburton and T.J. McConnell, but, you know, you shelved T.J. McConnell for the stretch run of that game last night, and he arguably was your best player. And these are some of the things that I wish coaches at some point would realize. Easy for me to sit here and say, Tony, but why is it that you're not allowed to go with who's hot? Who's running hot? You could have Halliburton and McConnell on the floor at the same time. McConnell continuously got to the glass, got on the interior, had 18 points, and then you shelve him, and Halliburton's out there and giving you really next to nothing. I think sometimes coaches, because of the status of a player and because of their rotation over the course of the season to where they are right now, sometimes don't see the fact that in a moment of a game, in a winning time, that maybe McConnell's playing better. Maybe Obi Toppin's playing better than what you normally would have out there rotationally. So coach it. Coach it that way and make that tough decision. If it's a bad decision, it doesn't work in a couple of possessions, then change it. But why you can't go with the hot guy down the stretch that's getting the job done is beyond me. All coaches normally do it. It drives me insane.
Talking to JMV, he is the voice of sports, yet you find him on the X at JMV 1070, at JMV 1070. McConnell had 18 points in 22 minutes. Siakam had 19 points in 37 minutes, and Turner 23 points in 35 minutes. You're not taking Turner off of the floor, and you're not taking Siakam off the floor. Your point is, if Halliburton's not having the night, replace point guard for point guard and see if you can get something going. And it's not the worst thing in the world. It's not insulting. It's about winning. When you're the coach in this position, you're Rick Carlisle in this position, you can't bring yourself to do it, or is your argument that they don't even think to do it?
His thought is, this is what got us here, and this is how we've done it. My response is, and people are going to look at it as, well, this is hindsight 2020, and you know, you have your big rear end sitting on a couch somewhere, and you're not making these major decisions. But, Tony, my argument is, if you got something going and it's going well, why not ride that horse until it bucks you? Why not? And especially given the circumstances of Halliburton the entire game, I'm not advocating taking him out. You could put McConnell in there with him, because McConnell would do just as well against Brunson, who was scoring at will against basically everybody on the Pacer team. I mean, hell, he can do that as well. But at least you have his energy, his driving ability, his creation going on, which, as we saw late in the game, Tyrese Halliburton didn't have it. If you want to keep him on the floor, fine. But at the same time, I still think you have to maintain a level of who's hot and who isn't in your coaching mentality. And I think all too familiarly, a lot of coaches are frail in terms of making that type of decision, especially when it comes down to the team's franchise player or best player. And for the life of me, I don't know why. That's why they're coaching, isn't it, Tony, to make those tough decisions?
One would assume.
You got to do that. Last night, I wish they would have.
One would assume, but how does one handle the tough decisions when the refs decided to take so much of this game to their own hands? Anything you're saying about the Pacers and not being able to handle the Knicks or doing this to themselves, all right, that's an argument, and you're making your case. But one cannot avoid the fact that the refs decided to make themselves a part of this game, and that screen that they called, you know, that foul they called on Miles Turner, amongst some others, as the expression goes, that dog won't hunt. Isn't some of the onus on these refs?
No, there's no question about that, too. And we get a lot of people, Tony, that say, well, you know what, you're a wimp if that's how you look at it. And I say BS to that. It's like bringing up a Colts-Browns matchup where the officiating cost the Colts the game. Sure, do they make mistakes down the stretch? Yes. But they put themselves in position. And at that moment, back during the Colts season, the Colts and the Browns, an official's whistle and a flag cost the Colts that game with a call. Now, I'm not suggesting that happened last night, But yes, there are a lot of things that led to that situation. You talked about the illegal screen call by Tyler Ford, by the way, from the state of Indiana, right? Westfield, Indiana. That was a horrible call. You talk about the kick ball that they called that was actually a hand on the ball. That was a 5-point sprint or swing. And then you go back, Tony, if you remember, Jalen Brunson fouls Miles Turner. They review it. They take it to Secaucus, New Jersey, and there is plenty of contact in this. And the replay center comes back with an overturning of the call that gives the ball back to New York. And Zach Zarba, the lead official, has the audacity to get on the mic and suggest that it was marginal contact, thus the call is overturned. That may have been the biggest BS call of the night. It was certainly more than marginal. And to say marginal contact occurred, if it's any contact that occurs, all right, you uphold the call, send Miles to the free throw line where he probably knocks down two. That's the beef I have. People call these guys the best in the world, and I know that they make mistakes. Everybody can, but bullcrap. They need to own it as much as the players, as much as the coaches. This is all involving, all encompassing in what helps dictate, ultimately, Tony, the outcome of games. And the officiating played a major role.
The NBA has to own it. This is the problem. The NBA never says, these organizations never say we did it.
The final 2-minute report, they come out the next day. Zach Zarba, after the game, said, you know what, in hindsight, we looked at the video and it was actually the hand on the ball. They're trying to be transparent, but they make themselves look worse with that final 2-minute report, which most of the time is a farce. All I'm saying is,
that's my point.
For everybody, Tony, out there that says, hey, you got to be bigger than that, you got to take the high road. No, I'm taking the road that is talked about, that is necessary to take to really break down a game. And as much as missed shots, as much as turnovers, the officiating played a significant role in how that game was played down the stretch. So what's wrong with talking about it? And even if the NBA is transparent with the final 2-minute thing, everybody kind of looks at it as a joke anyway. So, yeah, it played a huge role, and there's not a damn thing in the world wrong with talking about it.
Talking to JMV, he's the voice of sports. Let's move it over to Timberwolves and the Nuggets. The Timberwolves are up 2 games to nothing, 106-80. You look at the Nuggets scoring and how bad their starters did, but it's not like the starters on Minnesota did much better. I mean, McDaniels had 5 points, Anderson with 6, Conley with 4 points. Yet somehow they're winning by 26. What's wrong with the Nuggets?
They have the best defense, Tony. We don't talk about this very much, that we have seen in a long time in the NBA. They're absolutely locking the Nuggets down. And you could see the defending champions kind of lose their way, lose their mind a little bit, from Jamal Murray to Kentavious Caldwell-Pope, the guys that don't normally lose it in that capacity. Mike Malone, their head coach, lost it last night too. That's the frustration that comes when you're absolutely stifled defensively. And this has been, I think Barkley said last night on TNT, that's the best defensive effort he's ever seen. Well, it's right up there for me too, because that's how good they have been. You look at those final stats, that was some stifling Minnesota Timberwolves defense. They're good. They're the best defensive team out there by far. And then when you're talking about having, you know, the definitive player in Anthony Edwards right now, who can go get a basket whenever he wants to, whenever he needs to, and Carl Anthony Towns, even without Rudy Gobert, I don't think there's a lot made about the fact, Tony, that Gobert didn't play in game number 2 last night. His wife was having a baby in Minneapolis. He went back and missed game number 2 in Denver, and yeah, they didn't need him. It was incredible the way that they played and the way that they have done back-to-back games 1 and games 2 in Denver to the defending NBA champions. But that's how good they are, and it all starts with the Timberwolves on a stifling defensive end.
So your point is that the Nuggets can't compete. You're saying that this is very possible. It's a sweep for Minnesota.
It looks like the Timberwolves, again, starting with defense, they have ownership. of Denver right now. And it's funny, let's go back to the first round with Minnesota for a moment. You know, they ousted in straight sets the Phoenix Suns. They lost in the regular season three straight to the Phoenix Suns. And the Suns didn't look like they belonged on the same floor. So you're talking about an evolution of a team that just got better. We talked about regular season-wise their defense this past year, but they have raised, they have elevated that level of defense. And they're a good offensive team. Naz Reid is the sixth man of the year coming off the bench. You can count on him on both ends. But it's their defense, unlike we have seen a team play it. Normally, we're talking about offense, aren't we, Tony? We're talking about, hey, there's Golden State running up and down the floor and shooting threes and Steph Curry from half court. And look at Boston, Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum. But this is about lockdown defense. They have the length. They certainly have the want to, which is a lot in playing defense, certainly at that level. They just have right now defensively what other teams do not.
Before I let you go, can I share with you what I think is the craziest story right now in sports?
I think you should.
Not enough people are talking about the insanity here. And it's not the Tom Brady roast, which I am whatever to the Tom Brady roast. J.J. Watt, formerly the Houston Texans, spent a year with the Arizona Cardinals. He's now in the booth, right? He's analyzing games. He's talking about things on I forget which group he's with, whether it's Fox or CBS. He says, look, D'Amico Ryans, coach of the Texans, has my number. If they need me and he calls me, I'll go back to playing, but he really has to need me to get me to go. Is J.J. Watt out of his mind?
Probably not. Hell, he may get that call, to be honest. Right, guys coming out of
the Texans are going to call him out of the booth and say, hey, get down here. That's coming?
I wish, Tony, there was something that you could bring up that would be flooringly shocking to me as far as any decisions that are made in sports right now. But nah, it wouldn't be. It would not be shocking. I don't know what type of shape. I'm assuming he keeps himself in great shape. But obviously, being older, 2 years older and out of football, and you could see he was on the other side of it when we played, as you mentioned earlier, with the Cardinals. But no, it wouldn't shock me in the least that if they needed somebody right away that they were comfortable with, that certainly they could bring in and create a fan buzz even more than what they have right now. Why wouldn't you, right? It wouldn't surprise me in the least. Now, again, provided he's got any type of shape working, but no, it wouldn't surprise me.
JMV, he is the voice of sports. I appreciate you taking the time to be with us. Much more is going on. Find everything at TonyKatz.com. This is Tony Katz Today.
So inflation remains a sticky and top issue for our small business owners. According to our latest CNBC SurveyMonkey Small Business Confidence Index, only 1 in 4 now say that inflation has peaked. That's down from nearly a third last quarter.
Yep, but everything's fine. Nope, totally fine. Everything's good. Everybody's feeling great. The economy is terrific, and everyone feels wonderful about it. 3/4 of the people who responded to the CNBC poll think that inflation is going to go up. I didn't get to respond to the poll. No one ever calls me for a poll, but I'm one of them. Of course, it's going to go up. Except, of course, I don't have the right guy recognizing this, which is Jerome Powell, who has been so aggressive in fighting inflation. But is he now getting political? Maybe pressure from the Biden administration. Hey, it's an election year. We need those interest rates to go down. So bring on the cuts. Literally, Wall Street is waiting for a rate cut because Jerome Powell started hinting at, maybe we don't have to worry about this, we don't have to worry about that. So you're going to bring down rates now? You're going to bring down rates when there's no earthly way that rates should or could come down? Yeah, that's political stuff. And if the rates come down, the inflation goes up. So I'm with the 75%. Inflation will continue and inflation will increase. And therefore, it doesn't matter who wins the presidential election. We're still going to be dealing with this. It's going to take a while to bring this down. You can say that, you know, it's Trump. He's going to want to bring rates down because that's the kind of guy he is. What options is he going to have? What options is Biden going to have? Because the minute he wins, he won't care where the rates go. Because caring is not the name of the game. If you cared, you wouldn't make any changes. You'd keep beating back inflation. Find everything at TonyKatz.com. This is Tony Katz Today.
Young black kids growing up in the Bronx who don't even know what the word computer is. They don't know. They don't know these things. And I want the world open up to all of them, because when you have their diverse voices innovating solutions through technology, then you're really addressing society's broader challenges.
She has no idea what she's talking about. That's the governor of New York, Kathy Hochul, involved in a ridiculous bunch of nonsense, a worthless word salad. But as long as it's a conversation about diversity, everything's okay. Diversity for the sake, diversity as buzzword, is meaningless, meaningless stuff. And Americans are sick and tired of hearing it. It's what progressives tell each other to show each other exactly how good they are. It's the sign of their membership in the club. It's not a club that would have anybody like me as a member. It's why I wouldn't join, because if they would have someone like me as a member, it might be a worthwhile club. Tony Katz, Tony Katz Today. What's going on, everybody? Find everything at TonyKatz.com. And it's join, be a part of what we're doing, what we're building, what we're growing. Black kids in the Bronx don't know what a computer is? They never heard the word computer? This isn't true. This is silly. Now, one could argue that there are socioeconomic causes for maybe not having daily access to a computer, daily access to email, daily access to the internet, but they never heard the word computer is a ridiculous thing to say. Ridiculous. But of course, they need access, so we have the diversity of their thoughts. You see, the first part was nothing more than a setup to the second part. Young black kids are disadvantaged. Young black kids don't know any better. What she's saying, in my view, is young black kids are dumb, and that's a pretty messed up thing to say. And they need this access so we can be enriched by them. People should have access, if you will, because there are things to see and things to learn. But the idea that somehow they don't know what it is, or this de facto there's no access, is a very awkward thing. If you want to know where there's no access, talk about rural America. My beloved Indiana, rural Indiana, has internet access issues. The broadband isn't there. New York has far less of those issues. Places in Oklahoma that don't have access to broadband, don't have access to the net, makes things much more difficult. But that's something she's never going to bring up, and she would never make the claim that young children in farms in Oklahoma or farms in Indiana don't know what a computer is. There's something very, very ugly about the elites. And certainly there's something very, very ugly regarding how the elites have been acting. We've spoken a lot about Columbia University, of course. Did you know that, never mind the riots that took place yesterday in New York because the Met Gala was going on, that's where the elites dress in ridiculous costumes and pretend that it's fashion? Some of them look very, very good, because some of them are very attractive. Some of them, it isn't a precursor to some kind of fashion trend. It's just silly. And every headline is, celebrities stun at the Met Gala. It's not so much stunning as it is, my eyes, I cannot take this vision out of my eyes. These people were protesting the Met Gala, 1,000 of them. And then they were going to march down and cause disruptions. A dozen got arrested. They were burning the American flag. They were talking about the end of America. This isn't about Gaza. This isn't about the Palestinians. It's not what any of this is about. And we know this. The elitists want to get you to believe that that's what this is about. None of this is what it's about. The elitist actually believes they can provide this snow job. They believe they can lie to your face. They believe that they have the ability to say, you, and somehow you'll just be okay with it. Now, you know that wasn't me saying that. I just keep the tone, just in case I need to say something. It gets people's attention real, real good. They think they can get away with anything, and you'll just be like, oh, okay, that's what it is. But you know that what you're seeing on these college campuses isn't about Gaza. It isn't about Palestinians. It isn't about anything other than wanting to destroy what we are. Everything leads its way to capitalism is the problem. Colonialism is the problem. You know, the issue with in Israel is that all those white colonialists, and these people have never been to Israel. White colonialists? No. They don't understand Israeli. They don't understand Israel. They don't understand the fundamental concepts about citizenry versus nationality. Nothing. Zero. But they don't care about that. One of the great memes going on, I shouldn't say memes, it's a photo being shared all over social media that over at Columbia, they spray painted Free Palestine on the stairs, on stairs leading up to a building. And they spelled Palestine P-A-L-A-S-T-I-N-E. For the record, that is not how you spell Palestine. They don't care that they don't know. They are fine with not knowing. They are fine with their ignorance, and they are fine with putting ignorant things out into the world. This is how the elitist acts. This is who we're talking about. This is who we're dealing with as an enemy. If Kathy Hochul, the governor of New York, is going to tell you that young black kids have never heard the word computer, that is an absolutely elitist thing to say. Oh, these poor children, they don't even know how to say computer. They need us to save them. No. But I will bet you that their parents would love it if they were paying less in taxes. Less in sales taxes, less if they're paying an income tax. They would like to have less regulation. Maybe they could open a business this way. They would like to have less government in their lives so they can go about building their own lives, because they've seen what happens when government is all up in their lives and their lives still aren't going so well. You know how I know this? The governor of New York says their children don't know what the word computer is. And if they don't know what the word computer is, clearly everything that has been geared to help them, feel the air quotes, doesn't actually help. What it actually is, see, it works. It works every time. Every time. They can't spell. They don't care. And we're not discussing a simple spelling mistake that could happen when you're putting out a post or something on your social media feed. We're talking about misspelling Palestine, which is, I thought, as they told us, was the thing that really matters. There are 13 judges that have made the decision to not hire from Columbia Law. This is a story over at National Review. 13 federal judges will no longer hire from Columbia University students, or no longer hire Columbia University students as law clerks due to their behavior in the school's handling of anti-Israel protests. In the letter, they write, Columbia has disqualified itself from educating the future leaders of our country. All is not lost, ladies and gentlemen. We have been discussing for weeks, do not hire Columbia Law students. When they put out this missive that they shouldn't have to take finals because of everything that's happened on the campus, the law students are irrevocably shaken. Shaken. Go take the test. If you're shaken, let's do a little Taylor Swift. We'll shake it off. It was right there, guys. Don't blame me for going full Swifty. And move on. Stop telling us about your trauma. Get over it and get going. I make this quote, or I share this quote constantly, from author Gabriel Nevin, who wrote the book Tomorrow and Tomorrow and Tomorrow. And in this book, she's asking the question, or one of the characters is asking the question, how does one overcome their trauma when it's the most interesting thing about them? I do not know if Gabrielle Nevin understood when she wrote it exactly how profound that is. But that is an incredibly profound thought. If one does not overcome their trauma, if one does not try, but rather one puts their trauma on a pedestal, how could they ever grow up? Adulthood, maturity is about getting past the trauma, finding a place for it, and then moving on with one's responsibilities. That's what it is. And yet, that is what we never see from these elites. As a matter of fact, the elites work overtime to ensure that responsibility should be erased and eradicated. Take a look at student loan debt. Why should you have to pay back the loan that you took for the garbage degree that will not make you a living, that provides no value to society, from the university that made the claim that this is what you should do? Paying off the student loan debt is not so much about screwing you and screwing me. Paying off student loan debt from Joe Biden is absolutely buying votes. Of this, there is no doubt. But what it does truly is takes the onus off the university that failed the student. They spent this money and they spent this time getting a degree that provides no value to society, no value to themselves, is predicated and based on nonsense, on falsehoods, on flat out lies, and can't allow them to support themselves. So what do? You eliminate the responsibility of the payback. You take away any financial burden. And then, hey, you got this thing. It didn't cost you anything. You take away the responsibility, not only of the payment, but of the action of taking the loan itself. You take away the responsibility of what the degree provided or did not provide. And therefore, it's not on them. And if it's not on them, they're not responsible. This just happened to them. It's victimhood. I get that that is a heavy concept. And you're going to roll that around in your brain for, I don't know, a minute, an hour, a day. Some of you may already be agreeing with me. Some of you may be like, wait, what? If you tell these unbelievably pseudo-intellectual, immature 22-year-olds that they no longer have to pay back their student loan debt, nothing associated with the debt is their responsibility. The degree isn't their responsibility. None of it belongs to them, because the government now says, we'll take care of it. We'll take that responsibility off your shoulders. And once you take that responsibility off the shoulders, well, then we have to take other responsibility off the shoulders, like how you make a living, which is why they do what? They push for a $15 an hour minimum wage as a living wage, feel the air quotes. Oh, I'm sorry, 15, I mean 20 in California. 20, do I hear 25? Because it will be 30 by the time the election is about a week out. That'll be the kinds of conversations we're hearing. It'll be never ending. California, the state of California, is trying to put together a bit of legislation that says you can't fire people. San Francisco, considering a bill that will make it illegal for stores to close. This was a story that was out there. It's a San Francisco Board of Supervisors deliberating policy that will allow individuals to take legal action against grocery stores that shut down abruptly. Mandates that grocery stores must give the city 6 months' notice before closing. 6 months will be a year, will be 2 years. Because after all, it's wrong to the citizenry and wrong to the employees. And you business owners, you have to stop being so greedy and thinking that it's all about a profit. While the Board of Supervisors engages in more taxes and takes more of your dollars for their pet projects while voting themselves a raise. Because after all, look at the important work that they do. The objective of the elitist is to take away responsibility and force others to cover the needs of those who are within their ideological mindset. And if you want to talk about, wait a second, take care of the needs of others. Yes, we go back to Marx, from each according to their measure and to each according to their need. Why should these business owners have so much? And why should these young people be traumatized with the need to, I don't know, earn, prove themselves? Why should they need, why should they have to burdened with debt for degrees that provide no value? I mean, degrees that were very important but don't have any function in capitalism. You see, that's the problem with capitalism. And so it goes, and so it builds. This move by these judges, this is why, in the face of all the other madness, you should still recognize that there are rational people out there engaged in rational ideas that we can get behind. I've got this story up at TonyKatz.com. Keep it here. This is Tony Katz Today.
My house in Budapest, my hidden treasure chest, golden grand piano, my beauty focused EOU.
Those storms on the move, you're talking about from eastern Texas and eastern Oklahoma, all the way up and through Kentucky and Indiana, Ohio. We're looking at it here, guys. We're looking at that weather, dealing with it as it comes. Will it be hail? Will it be winds? Will it be a mix? There's the possibility of tornadic activity. Stay safe. Stay well. Don't go out unless you have to if the weather's getting bad. It's just, it's not necessary. And for a lot of places, the primaries, like my Indiana's doing primaries, vote, get home. Get home, get safe. It's the only thing I ask of you, if you don't mind. Find everything at TonyKatz.com. Tomorrow, everyone, take care.